Good evening. My name is Brooke Hollis. I'm the Executive Director of the Sloan Program in Health Administration. And on behalf of the Sloan Program and the College of Human Ecology, it gives me great pleasure to welcome you all to the Percy Allen Sloan Lecture in Urban Healthcare Leadership. This is the inaugural lecture. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with the Sloan Program, we were founded in 1955 as the first two-year academic program in the country. And for nearly 60 years now, the Sloan Program has been at the forefront of health administration, education, and research, and has been preparing new generation of leaders for the industry. We're honored to have with us today Mr. John Bluford III, who will deliver what promises to be an engaging lecture, and we're looking forward to that quite a bit. Mr. Bluford's lecture and visit to Cornell were made possible by the generosity of Sloan alumni, in particular Dr. Andre Lee, who's here with us tonight. We're fortunate to have him, and Clifford Barnes, class of 74, who unfortunately could not join us tonight. They wanted to honor the contributions of one of their fellow alumni, Percy Allen, who we also are fortunate to have with us in the audience tonight, to look at addressing the healthcare needs of underserved urban communities. And the we're very fortunate to have Mr. Bluford, as well as Dr. Lee and Mr. Allen, to have engaged with faculty and students today around campus, and it's a great honor to have them all with us. So in the role of executive director, I've actually had the privilege of working with all of them, and Percy is currently an executive in residence with the Sloan Program, so it's a great opportunity for all of our students, and he's been a great mentor and advocate and friend. So on behalf of Sloan and Human Ecology, I'd like to thank you, and look forward to working with you all in the future. And now, if you would please join me in welcoming one of our students, Megan Roberts, class of 2015, to introduce Percy Allen, class of 75.
Good evening, everyone. Great. Nothing goes under my watch. Nothing. These are the words of Mr. Percy Allen, who has undoubtedly held to his commitment and this sentiment to serve deserving underserved communities and urban centers. Now, when I say the word needs, I mean needs in every sense of the plural sense, right? So not just ensuring that the healthcare organizations in which he worked in Baltimore and New York City went under, he also aimed to ensure that the community didn't go under. He brought a credit union to a community that had no banks and just had check cashing centers. He ensured that local schools had a clinic within the schools. And he also ensured that the key stakeholders in the community came together to ensure that housing development for low and middle income communities. Mr. Allen has long been at the forefront of ensuring that we really take into consideration the social determinants of health and combine that with how we use community health systems to impact and help meet the needs of the community. It is my honor to present to you Mr. Percy Allen, Sloan Program alum, and our current executive in residence. Thank you.
Good evening. Well, 2 points. One, thank you, Megan, for that introduction. The other thing is also an honor to be honored here. It's also an honor for me to have Mr. John Bluford III as the inaugural speaker for this event. John Bluford III is President Emeritus of the Truman Medical Center. John also received, in 2013, the National Center for Healthcare Leadership Gail L. Warden Leadership Excellence Award. Mr. Bluford is the President Emeritus, and you know, someone asked about Emeritus today. Emeritus is something that is honored, bestowed to CEOs, very few. There's very few CEOs that has emeritus status in this country today. He served as president and CEO for 15 years. Bluford's distinguished career in hospitals with health system administration has spanned more than four decades. Bluford is nationally known healthcare innovator who has been recognized by Modern Healthcare and Baker's Hospital Review as one of the most influential people in healthcare. John served as chair of the American Hospital Association Board of Trustees in 2011. He was also the chair of the National Association of Public Hospitals in 2009. He chaired the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce in 2007, and chairman of the Missouri Hospital Association in 2006. We were talking today, and John has shared every major healthcare system, healthcare, AHA, and those type of institutions in this country. I mean, to be the president, a chair of the board of the AHA was quite a hurdle, and he was very successful. Just a couple things that's not on John's resume. Got these secrets. No. John, he believed in changing the culture. He wanted to change the culture from a safety net to quality. Most people say, well, they're a safety net hospital. He won't be known as a safety net hospital. He wanted to be known as a quality hospital. He changed the institution. He had to change the institution, the culture of the institution inside before he went outside to change the culture of the community. Couple of things I think is significant. John Board of Directors in the hospital, they named the building in John honor. It's the John Bluford Building. Now, very simple. I mean, it's not just a little office. It's the whole building. It's beautiful. He told me that his wife went there, this little story, and she said, John, you know, I saw they had a meeting at his organization. She said, John, she said, you know, I saw your name on the building. And you know what? It wasn't small. It was huge. So, John, I am so grateful and honored that you're here tonight. And now I'll have you come up and do your thing.
All right. It is really a privilege and a pleasure to be here today. I enjoyed an interface with some of the undergraduate student body earlier today, and then before that for lunch with some of the graduate students, and had a brief opportunity to meet the director, Mr. Will White. Thank you for being here, as long as you care to be here. And Professor Carmalt, I assume she's here somewhere. Thank you very much for hosting the launch. And this is an inaugural event, which I didn't know until yesterday. And that's quite an honor to be asked here. Percy has been just an extraordinary workhorse in the field and in the industry and is recognized for that. And you know, I can't think of a greater honor, Percy, than to have your colleagues, Mr. Lee and others, actually sponsor this legacy event here, which I hope I do justice to. So without further ado, I'll get into the message of my little presentation today. And I've got about 20 slides. I still call them slides, PowerPoint, images, whatever we call them these days. But I won't kill you by PowerPoint. It won't be death by PowerPoint. They're mostly pictures. And I hope to talk a little bit about population health. We'll reference that because Professor Kalmout said do that, so I'll do it. And then secondly, really dig for 5 or 10 minutes into economic determinants of health, because I think those of you who go forward into this business will be confronted with those issues. And then there's a little 4-minute video in between that introduces the notion of partnerships. If we're going to change the system, we need partners to help us do it. What you see in front of you is just a teaser. I'm not going to talk about this at all, but we've got this big museum within our hospital. In fact, I claim it's an art museum with a hospital in it, as opposed to a hospital with art on the walls. And maybe we'll get into that a little later. I just like the pictures, so I thought I'd pop this up. But this is not what the presentation's about. The presentation title, after getting, thank you for that, after getting this invitation, I've talked about this concept or theme of thinking outside of the bed. And in fact, I've done it all over the country several times and introduced this concept in Dubai, in the Emirates. And it got quite a positive reception, so I thought I'd use it more and more. But for this, because it's for Percy Allen, I said I can't do a rehash. I had to come up with something different and better. The concept here is that we cannot continue to do the same old things. I came up with this quote that I've had in the back of my mind for a long time. It kind of represents or describes my career path. And similar to Mr. Allen, we've often been confronted with environments that are going under unless there is dramatic and drastic change and strong leadership to do so. And this quote kind of demonstrates that. Don't sink the boat. I mean, don't rock the boat, but sink it, and then build a new boat. But I think that was a little dramatic for today's talk because there are a lot of good things going on in the field, in the industry right now, and you represent some of those good things. So I came up with this African proverb, and we've all heard the African proverb, it takes a village to grow a community. That's not this proverb. This proverb is, if you want to change the dance, change the music. I like that. It's got a nice rhythm to it. It kind of reflects on what we need to do as an industry and as a field to make a difference in the people we serve. So what's this population management deal? Well, I've got a couple of things on this slide circled out because they matter to me. And nobody really knows what population management is yet. We're still trying to find out, particularly in the acute care business. Now, the public health people have a clue because that's what they've been doing. But we have a little different twist, and everybody's got a different definition to it. So when people ask you what you think about population health, you must ask, well, how are you defining it? And here are some of the elements. But when you start talking about managing risk and payment rewards, that's really about managing the money, not necessarily managing the people or the population. So I kind of circle two things on here, three. One of them, health versus care, and that's the transformation element. We need to go from giving care to maintaining health. And the challenge among many is, okay, well, how do you get paid for that? Because the system doesn't reimburse us for keeping people healthy yet. Then the other elements on this one slide that I'd bring your attention to is chronic diseases and health of the community. So the health of the community kind of reflects the population management connotation. But the chronic disease management is how we get there. Because when you talk about maintaining the health of the community or bending the cost curve, you're really talking about chronic diseases. And I've got a couple of examples about that coming up. So let's talk a little bit about population health dynamics. So here we go. If you want to do population health, you need to do all of these things. And I just recently put let me see if this works. Yeah, I recently put oral health there. Because there needs to be a realization, believe it or not, that the mouth is connected to the body. It happens to be true. It's been researched. The mouth is connected to the body and needs to be a part of the equation when we talk about coordination, transitioning, handoffs, the whole body in population health. The other thing I bring your attention to is public health, and I kind of mentioned them in passing already, but they've got to be a part of the formula if you're going to be successful. And the other thing that gets missed often is behavioral health, mental health. 50% of the people that come into my emergency room either have an addictive behavior problem or a mental health problem. If you don't address that, the rest of the stuff just doesn't work. Keep that in mind. And then this community investment. Oh, I didn't mean to hit that. Oh, the community investment. That is about the educational system, the housing stock, the job market, economic determinants of health. Probably mean as much as any of those things on the chart, or more. I'll show you some examples of that in a second. Then the last one, which is a pet peeve of mine, and Percy and Andre, I've been talking about this for years. Violence is a public health concern. In our urban core, violence is a public health concern and needs to be addressed as such. So that's kind of my layout, and maybe you get a sense of my definition of population health. There's another component to it, though. So at one end of the continuum is population health. The other end of the continuum is patient-centered care. That's kind of been a buzzword for the last 2 or 3 years. But you know what's in between there? Neighborhoods and communities. And I think if we start there, we'll touch on both and get to the ultimate goal of full population health sooner as opposed to later. Because a population health connotation is so amorphous, nobody knows what it is. But you know what a community is. And you know what a neighborhood is. And the focus ought to be on quality of life of those respective places. That's how I see it. So let's talk about that for a little bit. Read this, absorb it, understand it, and you get a sense for where I'll be coming from on this element of the presentation. I believe this. A lot of people in my business don't get it, haven't gotten it, probably won't get it, because it's just not in their world. It's not in their space. They're running a business enterprise and don't get this. I think successful people and people who will make a difference in the community they serve need to get it. You are our future. I hope you get it. Because this is how we will move the dial relative to the quality of life of the people we serve and bend the cost curve simultaneously. I'm going to introduce you to Jim. Jim is a real patient. We've interviewed Jim. He's got a series of issues. Can you, everybody, read that? It's large enough. We call him Spaghetti Man because he's got issues. I'll just highlight a couple of points. The first point I have to highlight. He takes 10 medications a day. Anybody in the room take 10 medications a day? Don't raise your hand. Well, I've got an 84-year-old mother at home. She takes 8 meds a day. She lives in an assisted living facility. Her little apartment is about 50 paces from a nursing station. The nurses visit her 2 to 3 times a day to assist her with her meds. My wife, who is an angel, spends 3 to 4 hours a day with her, helping her with those meds. And I call once or twice a day to make sure she's on her meds. And she misses them. So how the hell do you expect someone without those support systems to be in compliance with their medications to keep them healthy and well? It's just a little commentary. 13 different medical conditions. I'll probably talk a little bit about that. Has not been employed for 3 years, and he lives alone. This is Jim. Jim couch surfs. That is, wherever he can find a couch, that's where he sleeps. Family, relatives, friends, that's how he lives. Couch to couch. Chronic heart failure, type 2 diabetes, high cholesterol, hepatitis C, user of cocaine, PCP, and THC. I don't even know what THC is, but it doesn't matter. Doesn't sound good. I don't care how many times he visits his primary physician or his endocrinologist or whomever and spends 20 minutes in the patient encounter with that clinician, they are not going to fix Jim. Jim has issues that are social economic determinants of his well-being. By the way, he's a amputee below the knee, gangrene of the toe. Family history, I had it written down, but it goes something like this. Mother died of diabetes. Father died of heat stroke. 8 sisters, 6 of whom are deceased, diabetes, hypertension. His mother died on his 19th birthday. Therefore, he does not celebrate holidays. It's called trauma-induced care. When you work with this gentleman, you've got to understand the trauma in his life, or you won't penetrate the issues. So we invited this gentleman to a program of ours. It's a CMS, Center for Medicaid, Medicare, $4.5 million innovation grant that we got a little better than 2 years ago, part of the Accountable Care Act. And the focus of that was to case manage high utilizers within our system that were either on Medicare or Medicaid. This gentleman is on Medicaid. And we invited him to participate in it. He's been in the program now for longer than 18 months. And we interviewed him a couple of months ago. And I just read a couple of excerpts from the interview. We asked him 7 questions. I'm not going to go over 7, but I'll go through 1 or 2 of them. Here's number 1. How did you become involved in the Innovation Healthcare Program at Truman Medical Centers? And his response was as follows. My blood pressure was out of whack, for one. I had high blood pressure, diabetes, and all that other crazy stuff. So I was admitted to the hospital, and then everybody just started to come and see me, telling me what I really needed to do. for a long time, and blood pressure was way out of whack. And I even stopped taking the medication because it was just too much stuff. And I can't pay for the stuff. So while I was in the hospital, they came and spoke to me about the program. They helped me get set up with Medicaid and all that other stuff, which made it nice and easy for me. I move to question number 7. You struggled with drug addiction on top of your chronic disease. Would you like to talk a little bit about that? Well, it's pretty much like this. I did not care because nobody else cared. So I just did whatever I wanted to do, take drugs. And since I've been going through this program, I didn't have, or before the program, didn't have all of these drugs to take because I stopped hanging around the people and bad elements of my life. I think the drugs now are the cocaine and the PHP. He stopped taking those drugs because of the intervention of this program. Then most of the people I know have ended up getting shot because of all the drugs they do. I don't need to be around that type of person anymore because I know if I go in those areas with my friends, I need to be strapped. You know what strapped is? Why, how do you know that? Carrying a gun. He just happens to know that. So I have to carry a gun. I'm not trying to take anybody's life, and I don't want anybody to take mine, so it's best that I just stay away. Since I've been in this program, I don't even drink. I've been drinking since I've been 9 years old. He's 46 years old. Now I only drink a beer once a month, sometimes twice a month. I don't believe that, but that's what he said. That's pretty good. I don't have to do that anymore because I know somebody cares. And in fact, I read the Bible once a day, and it seems to calm me. Well, you get the picture. I could go on and on with this, but I think the picture is to dramatize for you the human circumstance. This is a subset of the population that my institution cares for. And if we don't understand the elements in this gentleman's lives, and other people like him, we won't be successful at what we do. So here are some of the results of the program. So I had 1,800 Medicaid patients in this case management innovation program, and we threw resources at it. Before, this is a before and after intervention. Before the intervention, this cohort of patients generated 2,750 inpatients in a calendar year and cost $36 million to the system at our charges. And our charges are about 20 to 25% above cost. So you can do the math, determine how much these patients were costing the system. The simple arithmetic of it is about $26,000 per patient in a given year. For many years, I might add. Emergency room visits almost cut in half, and you see the cost there. That's for 1,800 patients. Mr. Evans, or Jim, was one of those patients. Here is our dual eligible cohort. Only 215 of these patients, $5.8 million in cost for inpatient utilization alone. Then you see their outpatient utilization and their emergency room utilization. And you can see how the intervention of this program cut their costs. Well, how did we do this? Well, because many of these patients, or at least a few that I'm aware of, were not taking their medication for diabetes because they did not have refrigeration in their homes to keep the medication good. So why don't you buy them a refrigerator? And that's what we did. Why don't you call the case manager before you call the emergency room so we can send the medications out to you? And that's what we did. Why not have community caseworkers that these patients will trust and know and know their culture so we can deal with it. And that's what we did. So the point here, in short order, is that in the future, hospitals and hospital systems that hopefully you will manage one day must create partnerships with all kind of diverse entities to help you relate to the communities you serve. If you want to be a community hospital, you must be out in the community. I'm going to show you a 4-minute slide presentation or film that talks about that.
Many health problems begin before you experience any symptoms. Getting regular health screenings can identify problems so you can address them before they become serious. That's why Truman Medical Centers has partnered with the Kansas City Chiefs to bring health and wellness events like Touchdown Family Fest to the community. This annual citywide health and wellness extravaganza provides health screenings, sports physicals, and a lot of fun for the whole family.
Last year, they diagnosed Devin with a heart condition here at Touchdown Family Fest. So we're always going to be a supporter of this program because it was something that actually touched our family. You know, we owe a lot of that to the Touchdown Family Fest.
Eating fresh fruits and vegetables is critical to a healthy lifestyle. But for some, convenient access to a juicy tomato, a fresh ear of corn, or seasonal fruit is hard to come by. Truman Medical Centers is bringing good nutrition at affordable prices to the residents of KC's urban core. Every Tuesday and Thursday, TMC's Healthy Harvest Mobile Market travels around the city making stops at locations in your neighborhood. It's just another way Truman Medical Centers is leading the way to a healthier community.
My wife is terminally ill. She's been diagnosed with cirrhosis of the liver, complications from hepatitis C, and where the damage is in her liver regulates a lot of the hormones and the enzymes in her digestive system, and fresh fruits and vegetables are very much more beneficial. It takes less time to come to the bus and get good fresh fruits and vegetables than it does to go to the grocery store.
The health and wellness section at the Lucille Bluford Library started in 2010 as a way to provide patrons with a central area to learn about their health. With the assistance of books, brochures, and magazines, computers linked specifically to wellness information, and scales and blood pressure machines available to monitor their progress as they go along. It has since grown into a 4-library program, encompassing patrons from their teenage years to senior citizens. Programs include chronic disease self-management teams, teen educational lock-ins, chat and choose to assist with insurance enrollment, and more than 30 mini health fairs with screenings for blood sugar, cholesterol, blood pressure, hearing and vision, to name a few. Together with Truman Medical Centers, the library program provides patrons with a central, safe place to learn about and track their health. The program has even inspired a few friendships built on wellness.
Well, first of all, Truman Medical Center was the one who steered me to the program. That's where I first learned about it. And the good thing about it is I met Joanne Lee through the program, and she got me through the summer because we would get up and walk in the park at 6 o'clock in the morning, and we would walk for about 1 hour.
I've been to this library for the last couple of years, and I got involved in the health and wellness getting back to better class, and it was phenomenal. It's conveniently located, it's not far from my home, and I come up and I get on the computers, and I also take the exercise class, the chair exercise class every Thursday. So it's just a whole lot of things going on here to improve the health of an individual.
At Truman Medical Centers, we believe what you put in matters, and that includes what you eat. From April to November, visit our Fresh Produce Market, where we bring healthy and locally grown produce to the community and to those areas with limited access to fresh, healthy foods. For locations and hours of operation, visit TrueMed.org.
I work American Cardiology, which we spend a lot of time talking to the patients about eating properly and changing their diet. And the most common thing people say is that it costs a lot to eat healthy. And with this, it truly is much less expensive for the patients, and it allows them to have fresh produce. They can come on their, and I think a lot of patients even come in if they don't have a clinic appointment to come shop here.
So that's a glimpse of some of the things creatively that we have done and partnered with atypical partners in the business. Here's a slide. I've got two of these slides of different partnerships, and I'll talk a little bit in a couple of slides about some of them. But one I'll bring out right now. The Sheraton Hotel is there because once you get into the healthcare hospital business, it'd be very apparent very quickly to you that no hospital has enough space to do everything it wants to do. We had a major sleep clinic operation in our hospital that needed to be expanded. And these are clinical operatories that allow people to come in and spend the night with all kind of apparatus on them, and the doctors can diagnose what kind of sleep illnesses they may have. We didn't have enough space in the hospital, but we had a major hotel within three blocks of the hospital. We called them and cut a heck of a deal whereby we have now eight hotel rooms that serve as our sleep operatories. We rent those rooms 365 days a year, 24/7. Our patients get valet service when they come for their sleep exam, and they get a free buffet in the morning. Hell of a deal. So you have to think from the patient's point of view. Would you rather come into a sterile hospital environment or rather go to a local hotel for that service? Local hotel. The other one is CBS, and that's not the television network. It's a part of the company, but it's about the billboards in the communities, and I'll show you a couple of examples of that later. And we've talked about the library and the bus, and the football stadium thing is real interesting. We do a Halloween party at the football stadium. We have about 2,500 to 3,000 kids come on Halloween night and celebrate in a safe environment and get healthy foods. That's a hell of a deal. These are kids that wouldn't be able to celebrate Halloween safely. And that's becoming a major project, one of my major projects. So here's an example, and I think Mr. Allen did something similar with a credit union in one of his institutions. This is a full-service U.S. bank on the first floor of our hospital, on the service level of the hospital, where all the employees congregate, cafeterias next door to it, pharmacy, so forth. So why is this U.S. bank in that hospital? Well, several years ago, I learned that many of my employees used instant cash stores, quick cash stores, to transact the business of their daily lives, pay their rent, pay their mortgage, pay their electricity, whatever. And what I learned, which was really an education to me, is that they don't have checking accounts for a lot of different reasons. And they pay these cash stores on average $1,500 to $2,000 a year for the privilege of spending their own money. That's just amazing to me. You know, the calculation is very simple. The $1,500 a year is probably more than the cost of living increase that they would get from the hospital at the end of the year. It's a raise. And I sought to fix that. So I imposed a rule, a very simple rule. If you want to get paid, you must have a checking account because we're going to do direct deposit. You don't have to get one, but if you want to get paid, you need to have a checking account. And then immediately the pushback was, well, I can't get a checking account. The bank won't qualify me, for one. I don't trust the bank. Somebody's after my money and they'll get the money from the bank, whatever. So we engaged a U.S. bank to come on our premise, full service, and the only requirement is that any employee who wanted a checking account could get one. Now about 98% of all of my employees, of 4,000 people, have checking accounts. This bank last year did $3 million in loans and received $3 million in deposits from entry-level employees primarily and people from the community, because there's no bank in the community. So people come to the hospital to use the bank. I love it. This is good. Because financial stress kills. And this is one solution to that. Just trying to open up your mind what healthcare and hospitals should be doing in the future. Walgreens, full-service Walgreens on our campus, because we have a major ambulatory care center, and this Walgreens, at the end of an elevator ride from our outpatient clinics, does 750 prescriptions a day. Busiest Walgreens in town. Medication compliance is important for clinical outcomes. Our patients get their prescriptions filled within 20 minutes or less. And if they don't want to wait those 20 minutes, they can pick up the prescription at their community Walgreens. Heck of a deal, heck of a partner. Morrison's Foods. We are part of Partnership for America. We've really changed our diet in the hospital, both inpatient and retail. We've partnered with them. This is one of the modifications that they made in our cafeteria that changes the way people eat. You'll see some of that. No trans fats, less sodium, no sugar drinks, none. Got a lot of pushback for about 2 weeks. Now it's over. People eating healthier. Only thing we didn't take out was the fryers because of fried foods, and people love fried chicken, and I like fried catfish. I am gone now, so the fryers may be gone. I don't know. But that's where we are. We used to have a McDonald's in our hospital. Didn't fit, guys. Didn't fit the mission. 7:30 in the morning, I'm walking up to our high-risk OB clinic. 7:30 in the morning, and I got young women there eating McDonald's. They're at the high-risk clinic for a reason. This doesn't fit. We had a 25-year-old contract with McDonald's that had 7 years to run, and I asked them to either change their menu and their price points for healthier foods or get out. It took 3 years, but they got out. It's a long story, and I don't have time for that, but they're out. We stopped hiring smokers 7 or 8 years ago. We don't hire smokers because smoking is detrimental to your health. We as employees need to set examples for the community that we serve, and we don't hire them. It's another story behind it. And then a pet peeve of mine, voicemail is the root of all evil, simply because people need to talk to each other. So this is my favorite slide. 100,000 patients a year, unduplicated. 73,000 of those patients have these chronic diseases. And I guarantee you the profile of virtually any other hospital in the country is somewhat similar. And it doesn't matter about their economic status. If they're coming to the hospital, they probably have a chronic disease. That's the food market that you saw. That's right under my office every Wednesday during the summer months. 600 customers, 3 to 4,000 pounds of fruits and vegetables sold at cost. You can't spend more than $20 there and walk away with it because it'd just be too much stuff. I love Wednesdays. I love looking out of my window, downstairs, see these people buying fresh fruits and vegetables. I feel as though I'm making a difference in the lives of people and improving the health of the community that I serve. That's the bus. You've heard about that. Better. So this is a 4-acre tract of land that the hospital purchased almost 2 years ago. Better is part of the tagline of our hospital. Better, better for everyone. And on this 4 acres of land, within the next year, I hope to have a full service grocery store on that site in the middle of the hood. Full service, not a Save-A-Lot, not an Aldi's, full service, with cooking classes, no cigarettes, no liquor, nutritionists to help folks shop, food economics so they understand how to get the most for their bucks. I gave this talk a couple of weeks ago at another hospital in North Carolina and got a great idea, and the idea was a nag and bag. That is, nurses doing the bagging of the groceries and telling the patients what they should be doing. Because these are our patients who will be shopping there. So this is the CBS billboard campaign. And many, many, many years ago, local community billboards in the urban core used to be used by malt liquor advertisements, Colt 45, and cigarette advertisements, particularly Camels. And then it got outlawed, and the billboards are basically no longer used until there is a political campaign and all the politicians buy them. We went to the CBS vendor and said, hey, give us those spaces. We'll provide the artwork, make a positive image for the community. So we got 40 or 50 of these kinds of messages and artwork that uplift the community. Makes a psychological difference, the mindset of the community and who they are. That's important. So this is the last slide in the punchline. This is what you're going to be facing, folks. You got to figure this out and how you're going to get paid, because if you're doing what you're supposed to do, you won't have a lot of patience. Before, after, 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 after. Make a difference. Thank you for having and giving me the opportunity to share my story with you. I think we do have 15 minutes for questions. Is that correct? Right. Thank you, Brooke. Okay, give me one. I know there's some plants out there. Brooke, oh.
All right, well, you know, I can't resist, you know, I'm interested in hospitality and healthcare, so I think that's a brilliant idea you have, but using the capacity of the hotel for a sleep lab. And have you done any other things where you've looked at maybe using that as sort of a quasi-step-down facility as a transition?
Oh, yeah. So okay. The question is, are we using the hotel for anything else as a step-down unit for the hospital? And the answer to that is no. I talked with a gentleman from Australia, and we were talking about different concepts, and he has a hospital in Australia that uses the local hotel post-delivery. So mom delivers the baby in the hospital, the next day she's in the hotel enjoying herself, and I thought that was neat. In this country, the length of stay is only 2.5 days, so it's a little cumbersome, but I really like that idea. And one of the things that I didn't have time to really explore is that the place for care is really the home. I think we're going back to the future. And we've got a series of about 12 diagnoses that the clinicians say we can treat this just as well or better at home versus having the patient come to the hospital. We'll just carry those services to the home. And as soon as we can get an insurance company to pay for it, we're there. And I think that's where we're going. That's where we're going ultimately. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
So when you're talking about public safety and violence, what have you recognized as being very effective ways for you to address that in your community? And also when you talk about establishing now the grocery store in an area that is very dangerous, what are the considerations you have and how do you implement various actions?
So the first question was relative to violence in the community and what we're doing about it. We've got a kind of have a, what they used to call hard straight program. A lot of these folks, particularly the gangbangers, when they come all shot up, then we take them through a program, try to intervene and help them see the light that there's a better way. You know, a lot of these young kids, they don't know anything different. Their parents were in the gang, their friends are in the gang. I mean, they don't know. You know, at the beginning of one of the talks I give about leadership is if you see it, you can be it. They've never seen anything else. So there is some counseling intervention in that regard. But I think my intent on defining it as a public health program was one, to get the acknowledgement from community leaders that we need to do something different. Starts in the schools. Got to intervene. Education is the answer to half of these things. So we have to do that. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Along the same lines of what you just said, along with education, it seems like your hospital really values, it seems like so going along with what you just said about education being vital and going along with your whole philosophy about healthy communities,
yes.
I was wondering to what extent your hospital focuses on hiring people from the community and also supporting like nursing scholarships for the local community.
Cool. All right, so what are we doing on the educational front? So I kind of took over a shipwreck some 15 or 16 years ago when I brought a very strong team of professionals with me from Minneapolis to change the culture of this hospital. And I asked them to join me, but I told them, don't do it if you're looking for a job. This is going to be a mission. And we all went down there and we were on it. We left Minneapolis without our spouses, and for 6 months we put the nose to the grindstone. And we made an assessment of the hospital. One of them was that we don't have the intellectual capital in our institution to do what we want to do. Over the course of a couple of years, it came very apparent to me why we don't. It's because of the educational system in the public health school, the public school system, Minneapolis versus Kansas City. And about 2 years into our entree to this environment, we realized that we had to train entry-level people how to be hospitable. We need to train managers how to manage, supervisors how to supervise. And if you didn't get it in the C-suite, you got out of there, and I got some new C-suite folks. Didn't have time to train them. And the first thing I did was sent about 24 people to the Disney School in Orlando. And we had all kind of fanfare, and we had the cameras and the news media at the airport, and many of these people never been on an airplane. I mean, it was a circus, it was great. And they went down there and they had 2 weeks of intervention, and they came back, and then they ran into a thing called supervisor. And the supervisors were saying, you want to do what? They were burdened by tradition, the supervisors were, and we couldn't get off the mark. And I realized then that we're not going to change this environment by sending 24 people every week to Disney World. Can't do it. We're going to have to train from within. So I hired an educator, a PhD in English, former provost, former dean, University of Wisconsin, University of Texas, University of Kansas City, Missouri. And I asked her to come and set up a corporate academy at our hospital. And she thereby went and partnered with every four-year degree program in junior college in the metropolitan area and brought classes to our campus. Degreed classes, GED classes. We did everything from offer employees GED classes so they could get reading efficiency and get their GED to master degree courses for the docs. I've got the numbers here, but I'll just give you some ideas roundabout. And that program's been in place for over 10 years now. So we've got 250 some odd employees who have gained master degrees from the corporate academy, which means they have a degree from the University of Missouri. We've got 50 to 60 people who've got undergraduate degrees. We have a number of people who've gotten their high school diploma. And my favorite statement is this: so we offer this GED class, and how many people do you think rushed to enroll and let all their colleagues know they didn't have their GED? Not a lot. So we had to prod, build confidence to get people to sign up for it. One gentleman signed up. He was a 50-some-year-old male, Caucasian. That's significant because we anticipated that many of the GED folks would be these young kids that didn't finish high school. No. This guy couldn't read. Been working for Truman Medical Centers for over 30 years, which means he's got to be real smart to finagle and maneuver himself for 30 years without being able to read. He got up in front of his colleagues at a meeting some months after him being in this program and told tearfully an audience about this size, by the way, that last night I read a birthday card to my grandchild for the first time. What the hell you think that does to the rest of the people in that room? A lot. What do you think it does for the culture of that institution? A lot. Bingo. That was about 3 years into my tenure at our hospital. And at that time, I knew I had a shot. We could make a difference and an impact on that community. And it starts with your employees. The customer comes second. Take care of the employees. The rest of the stuff will work out. That was the philosophy. Thank you for asking the question. Anything else? And please let me know if I overrun my time. Yes and yes.
So you talked a lot about the public health initiatives you do. I'm kind of just interested to hear more about some preventative health initiatives that you've taken at Truman.
Yeah, so what kind of health initiatives? In 2011, my research and my theme as chair of the American Hospital Association was for all 6,000 hospitals in the country to adopt a culture of health to lead the way to a healthy community. And many of my colleagues across the country followed a game plan blueprint of creating a healthy culture that started with the foods and healthy foods and instituted all kinds of carrots and sticks for their employees to get better BMIs and eat healthy and lower cholesterol and take a baseline examination on where you are with regards to your personal health, and then go through all these programs and retest. We have partaken in that. And I believe if we do nothing else, first of all, you know, the mission is to improve the health of the community. Well, half of the employees live in the community. So if you fix your employee workforce, you're doing a lot. And many of our employees, and it's just not our hospital, it's hospital anyway, you know, many of our employees don't take good care of themselves because they're so concerned about everybody else. They oftentimes got in the business because of ill health within their family and or some chronic disease that they had, and they got accustomed to being in hospitals. So really need to take care of our own within the system and then let that spread out. It's a good question. Okay, I know you had a question. Another one. You know a lot. Yeah.
Thank you so much for presenting to us this evening. In our classes, we're learning about how to reduce wait times and decrease or increase throughput. And in your own slides, you talk about creating a hospital that's more welcoming and creating a better environment. However, we want to keep patients out of hospitals and keep them healthier. How do you rectify these two ideas?
The waiting times. Yeah. So the future is doctor, the patient is now ready to be seen, as opposed to going to the patient saying the physician is now ready for you. So we got to flip that. And if you don't, you're going to lose. Secondly, we need to ask the patient what is the best time and day to schedule the appointment. Not give them a time and date. Ask the patient. And last but not least, a bright idea of mine and a pet peeve that is very difficult to resolve. But why would I give a patient an appointment at 9 in the morning when we know the bus schedule runs at 10? We got to figure that out. We got to tie our appointment schedules to the bus schedule because X percent of our patients ride the bus. So that's my idea of the customer service element and the waiting debacles that often plague our environments. If you are patient-centric, that stuff should get fixed. But you got to talk to the patient and be sensitive to the patient. So that was one side of it. And the second question was, that's the reason I'm retired. I can't remember two things. I can remember one. What?
I was curious about how we make hospitals more enticing to come and make them faster, but we want to keep patients out.
Oh. Well, you know, I think there's a theory and theme that hospitals will be ICU units and emergency rooms in the future. Everything else will be taken care of on an ambulatory care setting or, as I stated earlier, in the home. Or a different site, at the library, at the Walgreens, who knows. And I think there's some truth to that. A great percentage of our inpatient admissions are the result of the failure of the ambulatory care system. A great percentage of readmissions are the result of the failure of the first admission. You add those two things up, you can start cutting your bed count in half. And I think that's what you'll be facing. So we might be looking at 50-bed boutique hospitals that just deal with asthma. I mean, you see that in the cancer world right now. Why not? And have all the expertise there and all of the consults there that you might need associated with asthma. And there's a guy at Harvard, Walter Porter, that's got a model for that right now. Some people are trying it out. So that's what you might be facing. Makes sense to me. It would be very hard for people that have been in the business as long as I have to make that conversion. You have a fresh look at it. Do it. Yes, sir.
So what's the first step to implementing these ideas, knowing that we won't start in the C-suite? So how do we implement from the bottom
up? Oh, that's a great question. So the first step is, you know, leadership has no title. You can be a leader with any title in the organization. Leadership necessitates leading, not a title. So I always advise my new young mentees, you know, take any assignment they give you and make something of it. Create your own world. Make it valuable. Show how whatever you are doing brings value to the organization. Be bold. If you don't take a risk, you just took a risk. Be knowledgeable and be a sponge and learn as much as you can. People don't follow plans, they follow leaders. I know some people think I have, but I know differently. I've never done a strategic plan in my life. Some other folks have done some and put my name on it. But I believe in executing things. Come up with an idea, a concept that makes a difference in people's lives, and do it. And if it doesn't work, change it and do that. Worry about the consequences later. But that's my MO. That's who I am. Yes, ma'am. Oh, it's the genius in the group here. Yes.
We were discussing before how you were talking about hospitals that need to work on their partnerships, and you were talking about your partnership with Walgreens and CVS. So how would you recommend that we encourage corporations to shift from a profit-based motivation to a community-based motivation?
Cool. I told you she was smart. So the question is, in these partnerships with Fortune 500 companies, for-profits, how do we get them to buy in to our mission-based orientation? Nonprofit. Well, first of all, none of these guys are doing any of this for free. And you have to make a case that it's only not only the right thing to do, but it's a good business proposition to do it. 750 prescriptions a day is a good proposition for these guys. And we taught them how to manage the 340B program, which is a federal program that provides discount funding for the drugs that allows many of our patients to be able to afford them, or for the hospital to afford them so we can give them free. And that was very valuable to Walgreens. One of the things that I kind of bumped into serendipitously is inviting. First 2 years of my encounter in Kansas City, I invited, just about every CEO, every civic leader, every faith-based leader, and every elected official in the community to come and spend an hour and a half with me at my hospital. Sit and talk, have lunch or breakfast, then walk and talk. And the purpose of that was to explain to them why our hospital was a valuable community asset. And depending on who I was talking to, I had a different message. If I'm talking to the president of U.S. Bank or the CEO of Cerner Corporation, the big IT company, I explained to them how much money we generate in the community. We generate about $125, $135 million a year in the purchasing of commodities and building projects. They said, "Oh, really? Oh, yeah. We are a business," right? If I'm talking to the faith-based community, I talk about all the illness and the 3,000 babies that we delivered and why that's important for indigent patient populations to get good care. So you get my drift. There's a message for everybody, but one of the things that you quickly realize, many people see the hospital sector as a business, not an environment for service and caring. I don't subscribe to that. But it is a business. And more times than not, it's the biggest business in the community. 4,000 employees in the urban core is a lot of hiring. $500 million business operation. It's a big business. So most people buy into that, and if you can show where it's beneficial to them, they come. They show up, and they have. Good question. Yes, sir. Eric, you got a question? Oh, you are the. Oh, okay. Got it.
Thanks. I really enjoyed your lecture so far. But I have a really, really big question. I like hearing about these lectures and all the great programs, but it seems I'm kind of a finance guy, and so I come from that point of view. And so how do you go about creating these partnerships with payers on the reimbursement side for us as going into this to be able to fund those programs or kind of move towards these programs?
Yeah, that is a little bit of a challenge. And there are two things I don't allow. I don't allow my general counsel of the hospital to make decisions on managing and running the hospital. I don't allow my chief financial office make decisions on how we're going to run the hospital. I value their contribution and their input and the suggestions, and I might even use them. But we're going to make the decision based on what's best for our patient base and the community we serve, period. That's my deal. Their job is to find out how to make it legal and pay for it. And that's how I roll. That's how I do it. And that strategy has been reasonably successful. And for my board, I gave them a very direct mandate or position before I got hired, before I signed the contract, just to let everybody know where I'm coming from. And my point was, do you want to have a quality-driven institution with good clinical outcomes, with good customer service, in an aesthetically pleasing environment? And everybody said, yeah, we want that. Then I had some board members come to my current hospital in Minneapolis at that time and look at it and say, you want this? They said, yeah, we want that. Said, okay, fine. At the first board meeting before I was hired, I said, now, you said you want this. And I can guarantee you a positive bottom line. Guarantee you. Because all I have to do is lay off 250 people. But that won't get you a quality environment. But you just said you want a quality environment. Therefore, any given year, we will always budget for break even. And some years, we might miss the mark by 1% or 2% or 3%. Other years, we might make a 3% profit. But when we lose 1% or 2%, don't flinch. Because unless we're not providing good quality service. Now, if we're not providing good quality service, get me out of here, get somebody else in who can. So I had a very tolerant governance structure that allowed a little flexibility so that you can plan 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 years out. And you can't do that if you're managing the money and dinking around with infrastructure and funding depreciation because you had a bad year. So that's how I did it.
Great. Okay. I think Mr. Bluford's going to join us at the reception, so we'll chime for some more discussion. But Megan has a little gift to present here.
Well, thank you, Megan.
Great to go. Thank you
well,
so
thank
much.
Well, thank you so much. Very good. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And this is a wonderful venue, Mr. Allen. I hope I did you justice, and I look forward to coming again. Yeah, thank you.